God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
So we're in a series on stress, what's causing it, what Jesus says about it, what the Bible says about it, how to address it. And when people are asked what stresses them out, they have some not surprising answers, that money stresses us out and how we spend our time and our relationships. And we've woven those thoughts into how we've been talking about stress for the last several weeks. Today, I want to kind of bring that in a direction that you might not have thought of, and a cause of stress that you may not be aware of, but it's definitely affecting you, and more so as we go along. Now, depending on, you know, I think where you're from or your age, this might be a different factor. I had an older lady at 8:15 this morning when I told her, when I said one thing in the sermon, she said something that something happened at 8:15 that has never happened before. Someone said, I don't believe that's true at all. She said it really loud. So you've got to decide if this is true for you. You might be in denial about your diagnosis that I'm about to give you of what's causing you stress. But this will affect some of us more than others, but it is a way of understanding modern existence. It's in the air that we breathe. It is going on, and you have this. It is TMO, which if you're a texter means tomorrow, but this is not what we're talking about. TMO is something that's going on all around us. The bad news is that you definitely have it in some level or way or another, but it does affect all of us, and it is increasing. TMO stands for too many options. So turn to your neighbor and say this, you have TMO. I'll tell you the part exactly where somebody didn't believe what I had to say is this, that the average American makes about 35,000 decisions a day. That's when somebody said, I don't think I have that many decisions to make. And I think the idea is probably that we don't even realize how many decisions we're making. And even if that's 10,000, it sounds like a lot to me, right? And we're not talking just about easy decisions like with ice cream. We're not talking chocolate or vanilla between two options, which the answer, of course, is vanilla. And we're talking about complex decisions, not between two equally valid options, but between multiple valid options of differing degrees of complexity and validity. So it's not just chocolate vanilla, but also pralines and cream and chocolate chip mint and cookies and cream and Wow Now Brownie Cow or wherever you're, you know, whatever it is. There are a lot of options. And that's one way of thinking about what we're dealing with TMO. It's not just between good and bad things, because that in some ways is simpler. We're talking about how we navigate a world in which there are more and more valid options. And TMO, too many options, this reality that is expanding all around us is really a part of modern existence in the West, based on two premises. One is that if there's a choice to make, you're the one that should make it if it affects your life. In other societies or out through the history of the world, really, some of what was given to us has been sort of handed to us, and we just did it, and so we have more options. We get to choose our fate more, and that's not a bad thing. But with that means that you have a lot more decisions to make, and you should be aware of that. We've become individualistic, and that's not all bad, it's not all good, but one of the things that comes with this individualism is that individuals make more decisions. You have to make more decisions in our modern world. And with that, then the idea is that the more decisions we have, then the more free we will be. The more choices, the more options we have equals more freedom. So if a little bit is good, then a lot is better. And in some ways, that's stressing us out. It is an underlying source of anxiety that we want to talk about today. And then we want to talk about what the spiritual tradition, as the Bible has been saying about this all along. So let's just think about this, like the decisions that you have to make. You go into a coffee shop. If you walk into a modern coffee shop and walk up to the counter and say, I would like coffee, please, what do? They look at you like you're crazy because there are more than just a few options when it comes to the kind of coffee that you are asking for. Starbucks advertises that there are 80,000 different options in their store. That's a lot of choices, right? If you were to have a different coffee drink twice a day, you go in the morning and you go in the afternoon, two times a day, trying to decide which was your favorite, it would take you 109 years to figure that out. That's a lot of coffee. The grocery store, we all know this. How many of you have gone to the store, looked through the options, thought you picked the right one, but got the wrong one? Have you ever done this, right? What's more, even we're finding that people go to the store, they pick what they think is the right option, but they're not as sure. We are not as sure once we have picked, because how do we know? How do we know if this was the better option? Because there are so many. Let me give you an example from my life experience. This has really been a tragic event in my life the last couple weeks. I go to the store, and not every time do I buy V8. It's not cheap, but I like it. Not everybody likes V8. Any V8 fans? Any V8 haters out there? Yeah, my wife, Jenny, is one of them. So, and I think I probably should eat my vegetables, but every once in a while I just, you know, should have had a V8. So I buy that about every 4 or 5 times that I go to the store. And I'm looking through the options, and did you know that there are a lot of different kinds of V8? I like the original. I think it's the best. I think everything else is really not very good. And so there's, I got the list. There is V8 Original, Spicy Hot, Low Sodium Spicy Hot, Essential Oxidants, V8 High Fiber, V8 Hint of Black Pepper, V8 Low Sodium, and V8 Bloody Mary Mix. You can make your own decisions about that. And then 3 spinoffs of the V8 brand, V8 Energy, V8 Splash, and V8 Fusion. Just in the original sort of V8 category, there are several options. And then with all those different mixes with fruit kind of mixed in, all of that's gross. It turns out to be about 44 different kinds of V8. I like the original. I'm old school when it comes to V8. I get home and I have a 6-pack of V8. It looks just the same, except right there, what does it say? Low sodium. V8 original, awesome. V8 low sodium, disgusting. And I had 6 of them. This is the last one. Someone said I should drink it here. I'm not going to. It's too gross. I don't want to. Throwing up during the sermon is not. I've been choking them down one at a time because it's not good. So this buyer's remorse that we have has changed, and this is the point. When we have just a few options, what sociologists have noticed is that when we have just a few options and you get the wrong thing, you blame the person who made the product. Oh, they made a bad thing. I don't like it, whether it's blue jeans or whether it's a V8 or it's a car. If you have a bunch of options with multiple different ways of doing it, 40 some odd different kinds of V8, if you choose poorly, who do you blame? Yourself. And that is stressing us out. You probably didn't realize that was going on. Of all the decisions that we have to make, we have this sort of almost chronic buyer's remorse going on. We live in a world where there are more and more options, more and more things that we can buy, and we are less satisfied. It sort of shatters the assumption, the basic assumption that the more choices we have, the more free we are. I was talking to somebody right before church, and they were talking about how when they were working, they had to wear a suit and tie every day. And he said, my wife made that decision for me every day. She told me what to wear. I don't know if it's because he couldn't match or if, you know, if it had gone poorly, but it was like, this was, the decision was made for him. And how freeing that was. And we don't realize how many decisions we're making in a single day just to get about our business. We have more and more options all the time. And this is not just when it comes to consumer goods. If you think about it, we have more and more options for pretty much everything, how we spend our time, how we should structure our lives. We can go on Facebook and we have the option to compare what other people are doing with their lives and with their time and with their vacation and how they're raising their kids and how they're, what kind of dog they have. This is like dog week this week, like everybody's dog. It's like, oh man, your dog's cuter than my dog. We have lots of different options of how to live our lives. Dating technologies allow us to choose not between a select number of sort of limited pool of options within our community, but now it's almost unlimited. Every single person in the world is a possibility. That's a lot to choose from. Got to wade through a lot, apparently. I actually heard, and this is sort of related, that there is now an app and a technology that allows you to match yourself to a dog, back to the dog thing, a dog that likes the same kind of music that you do. I mean, it's almost, it is absurd, isn't it? What kind of dog, how do you know? There's a lot of questions. TMO applies not just to food and not just to stuff, but to almost everything. Oz Guinness says, life has become a smorgasbord with an endless array of dishes. The option to choose where we work and where we don't seems like a good thing, right? We can work from anywhere, but the problem is that we can work from anywhere. And we have to choose, do I sit at this stoplight and just be patient, or do I check my email, which is not a good thing, but some of us are stressing about those kinds of decisions. Do I sit at the soccer game and watch and engage, or do I send a text? Do I have conversations at the table, or do I watch a screen? There are a lot of choices that we're making. And so even among the good options of how we spend our time, we are stressed, maybe thinking that we aren't doing that well. Maybe we're not doing enough. Maybe we should be doing more, and how do you know? This is a source of stress for us that we probably aren't aware of. So one of the ways of addressing that is just to try to be aware this week of the decisions that you're making and why that might be stressful to you. I think that could be really pretty instructive for all of us. But as we turn toward diagnosis, I want to paint a different picture. And what the tradition, the Christian tradition has been giving us as a way of living, a way of choosing to live that really speaks to this modern reality. The Bible describes this inner peace that happens even amid outer turmoil. Psalm 46 is a picture of all kinds of chaos, of cosmic travail. Though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. Psalm 46 is also a picture of political upheaval. Nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. And the point is to paint a picture of about as chaotic as it can get. And yet, in the midst of the chaos, there are these basic, unshakable inner convictions. The psalm begins, God is our refuge and strength and ever present help in time of trouble. Therefore, this is the source of our ability to live without fear. This phrase that's repeated, and we think was almost a litany of like what the people in worship were to respond as the psalm was proclaimed. The people would likely respond together, the Lord Almighty is with us, the God of Jacob is our fortress. This is where we get the foundation for the hymn, a mighty fortress is our God. It's a picture of peace, of Jerusalem as the city where God's peace, the city of peace, dwells. There is a river whose stream makes glad the city of God. And you almost feel the tranquility even as you read the psalm. the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. There's a steadiness, a consistency, a peace. And then Psalm 46:10, in the midst of that, be still and know that I am God. That state of inner peace in the midst of external chaos is what we call simplicity. It's a simpler way of living our lives. Now, the truth is, when we think of simplicity and the practices and the habits that come with it, we often think of external things that we do, that we're limiting and maybe not spending or not having as many options in our lives so that we can somehow limit something externally. But the reality is we're talking about something internal. We're talking about the internal reality of knowing that God is God, of being still in our very souls. And those of us who are struggling to do that might recognize that part of the problem is that we have too many options or too many distractions or too many choices that are being given to us. That if left unchecked, what's happening is the world kind of gives us an endless array of possibilities, and it's too much. It's too many voices. It's too many opinions. It's too many perspectives. And so we need to figure out how to respond to that. Simplicity is the answer, I think. It's so focusing my life on God that every other distraction falls away. And in the same way, it's limiting the number of distractions so that I can focus my life on God, of loving God and loving neighbor. It looks like something we do on the outside, but the purpose is something that happens on the inside. The goal is for something that happens on the inside. And I think it's not a tough sell. You know what I mean? I think most of us want this. But truth be told, we don't know how to get it. And simplicity gives us some guidance. This is not new. What I love about kind of going and looking at sociologists and psychologists is very often they tell us things that spiritual leaders and the mystics and the prophets have and the preachers have been telling us for a very, very long time. Things that if we claim and own ourselves can transform our lives. And so simplicity is this sort of group of habits that help us simplify, to help us hone in. And the great thing about habits, as we've been saying in this series, is this, that once a habit is established, it means that you don't have to make the decision anymore. It's cutting out some of those tough decisions about should I do this or this. Habits just become this almost automatic thing that we do. Should I get up and go to church on Sunday or not? Well, if that's a decision that we have to make, it's stressful. If it's not a decision, you just do it. Should I brush my teeth? Most of us are not stressing out about brushing our teeth. If we are, then that's, you know, something else, maybe. But most of us don't think about it. We just do it, and it's not stressful that way. That's the beauty of these habits. And so let me talk to you about some of those habits today. The first is what we would sort of categorizes the habits of saying no. And this is challenging for some of us, but it's freeing. That we say no in order to be able to say yes. Simplicity means that we limit our options, we say no to certain things, even good things, so that we can say yes to the best things. Simplicity is the realization and the acceptance that we can't do it all, that we can't be everything to everyone, that we cannot make everybody happy. And this is not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Those of us who are people pleasers, this is a struggle for us. We like to say yes, but saying no can be a holy thing as we begin to limit our options. It can be good news. It's not the loss of freedom, but actually the ability to walk into freedom for those of us who have too many options. Why is that the case? Because the goal is for us to focus our time and our energy and our money and our lives. The goal is not to spread ourselves so thin that we're partially available to everyone, but instead to focus in our relationships so that we're more fully available to a fewer number of people, to God, to our neighbor. The goal is not to be anything we want to be, as we're told, but to be the person God says we are, to hear God's voice calling us to a certain path. It's not an endless array of options. There are the options that God gives us, and that limits us and that frees us at the same time. God is calling you to do and be something, and that is not something that you have to create. It's not something you have to invent. It's not something you have to manufacture. It's not something you even have to make choices about. It's simply something to discover. It's being laid out before you. And that way of thinking begins you on the path of freedom, I think. And it leads to focus and intensity. The fewer choices are actually better, that allow for clarity. Colossians 3 says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. It makes me think that a lot of what we do is based on what other people think we ought to do. And what would it be like to be freed from that and to really live into that scripture, that we find the path to what we do through our relationship with God? That is simplicity. Simplicity is the realization that we say no to certain things because we need some subtraction in our lives. That if we keep adding and adding and adding and adding and adding and adding, it just becomes too much for us. We think peace comes through addition, but peace very often for us comes through subtraction. So some of you know Trey Kennedy, the comedian. He has a t-shirt for this. One of our ELC teachers showed me this a few months ago. And she was so excited about it. She was going to get the t-shirt. Do less, God bless. I don't know if you need to get that t-shirt, but maybe you ought to tuck that phrase in your head. I've been laughing about it for 6 months now, just kind of thinking about how I might need to say no. And a few months ago, I did that. I had some commitments that I'd made outside of the church to different things that were part of ministry, but just good options, but just too much. And I said no to a few things so that I could say yes to some better things. And one of those things actually was this week to begin meeting with people who've just graduated seminary in our conference. So about 10 ministers who've just graduated seminary who are in those formative years before they are launched fully into ministry and or are ordained. And I'm going to get to meet with them about 8 times a year for the next 3 years and build relationships with them. And that focus felt better than spreading myself so very thin. Do less and God bless is behind that. Simplicity does have to do with our stuff. And again, this looks like an outward kind of set of habits that really is about an internal reality. And so begin to think about how that might affect our relationship to things as we steward our resources. I think simplicity means, and you can write this down if you like, have less and be more. It's a set of financial decisions that we make, not because we have to or not because someone says we should, but because we have chosen to live a certain way as it relates to material possessions. Jesus told us that life does not consist in the abundance of possessions, and this is something that we struggle with. Ecclesiastes 5 says, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. And Ecclesiastes is not afraid to tell us all kinds of things that are meaningless. It's a little depressing, and yet it's descriptive. It's not meant to sort of guilt us. It's more meant to help us see what is really the truth all around us. And this is not a new reality, is it? This meaninglessness, this chasing after things, this proliferation of options is right there in Ecclesiastes. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. Isn't that so interesting? It's been there all along. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, but whether they eat little or much, but as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. I think that might describe the experience of some of us who have a lot of options. And so simplicity means we push against that. We realize that that is is a thing. And so we decide on our own, not because we have to or because somebody told us to, that we're gonna set limits and we're gonna do certain things as it relates to our stuff and our money, to only buy things that we need and only keep things that are important. Lynn Sweet is a Christian leader, and I read in a book several years ago that he only keeps stuff in his house that has a story. Like, if it doesn't have some kind of connection, if there isn't a story behind it, it goes. And so that the things that they have in their home are the start of a conversation and the deepening of a relationship. there are other things that we can do, like spending limits that we call a budget. That when we think about budgeting and how we are going to set up our finances, that we get to choose what those limits are. Not because we have to, not somebody because somebody made us to, or not because we're afraid that some bad things are going to happen if we spend money a certain way, but because we get to choose what happens with the things that are placed into our hands. And so guidelines there include 10% to God and 10% to savings and 80% to the things that we need to do to take care of our families and to live our lives. Those kinds of limits become the source of freedom for people who are living into these realities. John Wesley said, make all you can, save all you can, give all you can. That's helpful for me. Ultimately, what we're talking about is a way of thinking about freedom, that we set limits to be free. And so that's the last point. Because behind all our options and our opulence and our overfunctioning is the lie that we are in charge of the world, that we have to carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and we do not. All our stuff and our activity and our options can just be another attempt to prove our worth when that whole exercise isn't necessary. But simplicity is rooted in the idea that this is God's world and not ours. We find peace not in frantically hoarding, but in faithfully trusting. We find rest not in carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders, but in trusting that we actually don't. We set limits to remind ourselves that we are actually limited by nature, and that there is one who is limitless. Simplicity is the ability to truly be grateful, to take what we have as a gift from God and to use it for Him, to elevate God above every other thing in our life, and to minimize every distraction from Jesus. And that's the point of our gathering here in worship as we come to communion, to remind us that the most important choice that we have in our lives is a choice that has been made for us. The most important choice is God's choice for you, to choose you, to love you, to redeem you. Someone has said that one of Jesus' best lines is this: rejoice only that your name is written in heaven. And of all the things that we end up focusing on, we become distracted from the one thing that's most important. And so we're going to pray. Martha and I are going to lead you in a prayer today that is intended just to be a moment of simplicity and focus on Christ. And so as we pray, I invite you just to kind of find yourself in a comfortable position and to take a deep breath. I know we've had someone have to leave worship today, and so that we just want to acknowledge that and lift her in prayer. And then as you find yourself in God's presence, I just invite you to take a moment to pray as you need to. And we're going to give you a moment of silence here. And then as your focus comes to Christ and your need for Him, and as your reality comes as you come to the realization of the reality that the most important thing is God's choice for you in this moment, we will lead you. So let's just take a few moments in prayer.
Most faithful God, on our own we conclude that there's not enough to go around, and we're going to run short.
Run short of money, of love, of grades, of stuff, of relationships, of years, of life.
We should seize the day, seize the goods, seize our neighbor's goods, because there's not enough to go around.
And in the midst of our perceived deficit, you come.
You come giving bread in the wilderness. You come giving children in the 11th hour. You come giving homes to the exiles.
You come giving futures to the shut down. You come giving resurrection joy to the dead. You come fleshed in Jesus.
And we watch while the blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed.
The deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor dance and sing.
We watch and we take. Food we did not grow and life we did not invent and future that is gift and gift and gift and families and neighbors that sustain us when we do not deserve it.
It dawns on us, many of us late rather than soon, that you give food in due season. You open your hand and satisfy the desire of every living thing.
By your giving, break our cycles of imagined scarcity.
Quiet our anxieties of lack. Transform our eyes to see the abundance.
Mercy upon mercy.
Blessing upon blessing. Sink your generosity deep into our lives so that your muchness may expose our fear of never having enough. As we endlessly receive, may we endlessly give.
So that the world may be made resurrection new, without greedy lack, but only wonder, without coercive need, but only love,
without destructive greed, but only praise, without aggression and evasiveness, all things resurrection new.
All around us, toward us, and by us.
All things resurrection new. Finish then your creation in us, we pray, in wonder, love,